on digital radio. You can also listen to us live online. It's 3 o'clock and time for this week's World Roots. This week, Lucy Duran continues her journey with the World Roots Academy protégé, Hari Sivanesan.
When we chose South India as a focus for the 2011 World Roots Academy, it seemed like a very straightforward story. We were going to go to South India, and we would be looking at Carnatic music, the classical music of South India. And then we chose our protégé, Hari Sivanesan, born in London, who plays the Veena, which for me is the quintessential South Indian classical musical instrument. However, nothing is as straightforward as it seems, because it then turned out that actually Hari is of Sri Lankan origin, and that the world of South Indian classical music extends beyond South India into this island where we are now, Sri Lanka.
Hello, this is Peter speaking. Ah, hello sir, how are you? Wonderful, you'll be spending time with us in Jaffna. Civil Coordinating Office, yes? Is that the military? Great, okay, well, we'll call you when we reach Kilinochi, Colonel Disaraka, and we'll let you know when to meet so we can arrange our military escort. That's great. Thank you for your time, sir.
Oh, Peter, you're such a charmer. That was Peter, meanwhile, our producer, talking to the colonel who has been appointed to accompany us
and escort
the
us
whole time
around
in Jaffna.
Yes.
Because clearly, recording music is a very, very dangerous and highly political thing to do.
Well, it seems to be here.
Anyway, Hari, we did get through the checkpoint.
Yes.
With no problems, it must be said, so the famous facts did its trick.
The letter from the Ministry of Defence. There was a few eyes open when they saw the letter, though.
I think there were a few eyes open when they saw us, because I don't imagine that many non-Sri Lankans are allowed to travel.
Are allowed up to the north of Sri Lanka, yeah.
And so here we are in our noisy van on a
rather bumpy road,
going through pretty flat landscape.
Yeah.
Military posts all along the way, a lot of barbed wire.
Yeah.
I've seen a ruined Buddhist temple.
Yeah.
I've seen a ruined church. And I've seen a ruined
Tamil temples, yeah. You've also seen a few houses with people starting to rebuild their lives, I suppose. I mean, new banana plantations in their garden and things like that. So it's a real mixture.
There's a sort of a poignancy to it.
It's just
terrible to think of a place that's so beautiful and culturally rich and so lush to have been devastated by war for so many years. Yeah. What, since 1982?
81, 82, yeah.
And just to the right of us is that whole area, which is a no-go area, which is called Vanni, which is where the refugee camps are.
Yes, and they still are there. I mean,
and heavily landmined still.
And I mean, there's a lot of people I think still stuck in the area. But I think this main road that we're on is the one clear pathway to the north from all the way from Colombo.
The irony is that from Tanjavur, where we were just a few days ago in South India, to here as the crow flies is nothing, practically. Yep. And yet we had to go from Tanjore, we had to go all the way back up to Chennai, which was
six hours drive.
Grueling drive. And then fly down to Colombo. Yep. And now it's taken us 2 days to get back up here.
It has. And unfortunately, I mean, the time we're going, that the flights are cancelled. Having said that, I'm really glad that we drove, because as long as the drive is, being able to see the reality of what's happened to the country, how the people are and what the situation is here, I mean, I think I've learned a lot from it already.
Finally, this is Jaffna town, right up in the very, very north of Sri Lanka, the last northern tip.
Yeah, we're in the peninsula.
And this is where you come from, Harry, and where you haven't been since you were 9 years old.
Yeah, the last time I came, I was nine, maybe eight, not quite sure. But this is where I grew up as a baby. And I'm really excited to be here.
Jaffna is a very ancient city. Isn't it? A very ancient Tamil city.
It is. In Tamil, we call Jaffna Yarpanam. And that's because a group of people called the Panars came here with the instrument, which is called the Yal, which is an ancient harp from which the Veena eventually came 700 years later. But it's old enough that we know of Jaffna Tamil kings. There must have been palaces here. The culture here is very similar to that of South Indian Tamils, but there's so many differences as well. And I've been so many times to Tamil Nadu in South India, where we just were, and so many times to Colombo to see my grandparents, but I've never had the opportunity to come up here as an adult. And so I'm really looking forward to soaking up as much as I can of my homeland and hopefully taking some of that back with me. Well, this music is justly famous. It is just incredible. Yeah. The power of the music, the precision of the drumming, the beauty of the Nadaswaram. It's outstanding.
So
I'm blown away.
This is Nadaswaram of Jaffna.
Yes, yes it is.
And it's supposed to be the best Nadaswaram, and it really lives up to its reputation, doesn't it, Harry?
Yeah, I have no words. I'm absolutely blown away. My parents and all the elders used to tell me, "Oh, Jaffna Nadaswaram, there's nothing like Jaffna Nadaswaram." And today is probably when I've appreciated and understood it the most. So we're standing with the lead drummer. He's from this village itself, Inuvil. His name is Sudhakaran Sinaraja.
Tell us about your ensemble. Have you all? Is this a family tradition?
Enakku
The tabla's been in their family for three generations. His dad was an extremely famous tabla player called Yarpanam Sinnaraja.
The tabla is the name of the drum.
The double-headed drum that we heard. Played with one hand with a stick and the other hand with the fingers, but with rings made out of a paste mixed with cloth, which hardens to give that really fierce sound, I suppose. So he's the third son of his very famous father, Yalpanam Sinnaraja, and he's playing today with his brother, and it's been in the family at least three generations.
So here we are, standing outside the temple, and even as we're speaking, we can hear the drumming going on, tabla going on inside the temple. Clearly, it's devotional music, even though it's classical music as well.
He said, definitely, for part of a set, they definitely stick to something that was pure Carnatic classical, but the Nadaswaram is infused with devotion, so therefore they'd set apart a certain amount of time for devotional music, for what we call Pannise, which is the music, that's the set devotional music for South Indian Hindu temples. So they set aside certain times within a set for devotional and Pannise music.
So despite all the troubles that you've been suffering in this part of Sri Lanka, nevertheless, the temple continues to provide a context for your music.
He's saying that him and their generation, they're absolutely soaked in the music, and it's because of the temple, it's because of the people in the temple, it's because of how much they help and inspire and promote him that they are able to keep the music alive and to be who they are.
Well, clearly life in Jaffna revolves very much around the temple. This is a very, very living place that we're in now. People are coming and going the whole time.
It's the heartbeat.
They're praying the whole time. And part of the life of these temples is the Nadaswaram and the drum, the tabla.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we're going to be hearing lots more of this in Jaffna.
Sure,
but surely, Harry, nothing as spectacular as this group.
No, these guys are absolutely outstanding.
We're inside the temple and it's filled with people, and it's a really exciting moment. The deity has just come off the altar.
Yes.
What's happening?
We're at Thavadi Puliyar temple, which is a sweet little Ganesh temple here in Jaffna. Today's their chariot festival, and they've just lifted the five-faced deity of Ganesh, which has five elephant faces, and now his brother is being lifted off the altar, and they're being hoisted onto everyone's shoulders to be taken around the temple, and then finally to be put on the chariots outside to be taken outside.
And I noticed that all the men have had to take off their shirts, including you, Harry. And including the sound engineer.
Yes. We're all standing here shirtless. It is traditional that men come into the temples shirtless and with only a dhoti or a lungi on.
Today is a really important day in the Hindu calendar.
It's a really important day in the Hindu calendar. Today's the beginning of the year, and so a lot of temples in Jaffna will coincide their temple festivals and their chariot festivals to coincide with this day, because they know everyone's off. It's already an auspicious day because it's the first day of the year, so it just makes sense to have your chariot festival today.
Just a little detail, it's actually the 14th of April.
Yeah, it's the 14th of April.
8 a.m. Throwing petals over the deity, and there's everything is sort of reaching a pitch, a frenzied pitch.
It's very traditional. I mean, in the scriptures it's written what music to play when in the temple. And it's very traditional that when the deity is leaving the temple to go for chariot festival, all the pieces that are played are in five.
Magnificent. He is. He's got a silver umbrella above his fine face.
And they're rocking him as they bring him out of the temple.
There must be 20 men on each side holding giant bamboo poles, and the deities on the top of them, all covered in garlands. They're coming towards us and they're rocking backwards and forth.
Yeah, it's traditional that when the deities leave the temple for the chariot festival, it's said that they're actually angry because they're going out to collect the negativity and of the surrounding community. So,
after events here in Jaffna, there must be a huge amount of negativity.
Yeah. I mean, and one thing is spirituality definitely hasn't died in Jaffna, so...
You've got to stand back, Harry, because they're coming this way with enormous power. Emerging from the temple, and the Nadaswarams, there are about six of them, are all playing the drums, and people are just going mad. I mean, It's clearly an incredible moment for everyone. Women standing all around me carrying clay pots full of fire as if it weren't hot enough. On this April morning, there are flower petals being tossed over everyone from the top of the temple as the deities come out. And just across from us is this enormous chariot that the deities are going to be put onto to be carried around in procession. And here come the deities. It's really, obviously, very, very, very heavy and quite terrifying. Close to us.
The rope's being given out to hold and pull the deity, so they're about to get ready for the procession to start.
Those are very, very big ropes.
Very, very big, and very thick, ropes. Very long ropes. Yeah. And the chariot's just left.
Oh, it's huge, this chariot. It really is colossal. Towering above me.
And the little bells on the chariot tingle every time the chariot moves, so you know that the Lord is making his way through the village.
Well, they're off again. They're on their circuit. Yeah. I think it's time to go and hear some music.
Yeah, it's time for some Jaffa music.
Danam, danam, dana, dana, tam, dana, danam, dana, dana.
Sounds totally different from anything else that we've heard
here
in Jaffna. And it's a style of music called Vasanta Kutu.
Vasanta Kutu.
It's a stick dance, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the group that we're listening to, the lead singer, is this gentleman here who's with me. And your name is?
Sobregasam.
Tell us what this music is, Vasanta Kutu. Vasanta. When do you play it?
Malayla Kalangal and Jivangal. But Koil Tinangal.
So these pieces were written by a poet called Poet Vishwa or Vishwa Pulavar. This was written in 1785, and he wrote them on as was traditional then on palm leaves. And so they were saved, and it was actually his nephew that then taught these songs and these poems and wrote and gave a tune to them and taught them to this gentleman, Siva Prahasam's grandfather's grandfather. So the tradition has been running in the family for over 200 years. And also, this dance is generally done, actually, in order to invoke rain. which is something very strange because I didn't know we had rain dances and things like that in Sri Lanka. It's complete news to me.
It's very, very hot today on this New Year's Day. So maybe we need a bit of rain today.
This way, 22 years not go to my house. 22 years. All the instruments lost.
So he's saying that the dance is actually from Jaffna and within Jaffna from a place called Telipalayan from Kadduven. And so this gentleman is from Telipalayan Kadduven, and it's been 22 years since he's been to his house because he hasn't been able to go. So he's lost all his instruments, he's lost everything to do with Vasantan Kuttu.
Documents.
So he lost his documents for all the Kuttu scripts and all these things in the first set of problems in the 80s. And then what he managed to rewrite and keep in books, he again lost just now when he's not been able to go to his house.
So how, in that case, have you remembered?
Whatever he managed to grab, he took out. But also whatever he's found from other sources is what he's able to sing now.
Are you the only group that's performing Vasantha Kuttu?
Well, there's no other groups here because they don't know the steps, they don't know the songs, the original songs written by Bishop Buluwet. So because of that, they are the only one existing group left in Jaffna.
So the tradition rests on you.
Probably been about 15 minutes or so since we ended the Vasantan Kuttu session, and it's been a month and a half since it's rained here in Jaffna, and all of a sudden you can feel the rain start here, and there's a huge group, there's a huge, absolute huge rain cloud coming towards me. It's really surreal. I can't believe this is happening. So obviously there is something special about Vasantan Kuttu, whether they're in their Veerabhadra temple or not. Today's a very special day. We're here at Telipale Durgaamman Temple, and this temple was very special to my maternal grandparents. And when I lived here as a baby, I know they used to, my grandmother religiously brought me here twice a week, and I even had my hair shaved off as a baby here, which is part of your religious ceremonies as a child. So it's really special I'm here. I know my grandparents would have absolutely craved to come back here in the last 20 years of their lives when they lived in Colombo. We're about to go in. They're actually bathing the deity as we speak, and probably after they've dressed the deity, we'll do some prayers. And if it's appropriate, hopefully I'll be able to sing. Virumani Aya, my grand teacher, wrote a song especially about Durga, the mother at this temple. So it'll be really nice if I could sing it here. Pichanam Diyanam Desanam Dukkanam Dharmina Sariyam Vigayaham Nithya Parivurna Dharmangadana Siddhyattam Kraga Dosa Nivarnattam Roga Dosa Nivarnattam Anitrahanam Bhaktu Yinika Yinika Paruvenamma Yinika Yinika Paruvenamma இன்பத்தமிழ் அன்புடன் உன்னை நான் இனிக்க இனிக்க பருவேன் அம்மா நினைக்க நினைக்க பழிக்கும் கள்கள் நினைக்க நினைக்க பழிக்கும் கள்கள் நிமலே நினையே போற்றி பண்கள் இனிக்க இனிக்க பருவேனம்மா இன்ப தமிழ் அன்புடன் உன்னை நான் இனிக்க இனிக்க பருவேனம்மா அம்மா பாதம் காண்பேன் பங்கஜ பூவில் பாதம் காண்பேன் பங்கஜ பூவில் பாடி மகிழ்வேன் பைந்தமிழ் பாவில் ஆதரவு அருள்வாய் அம்பிகே துர்கா அம்மா ஆதரவு அருள்வாய் அம்பிகே துர்கா அழகு தெளியம்பதி அமர்பவலே தேவி இனிக்க இனிக்க பருவேனம்மா இன்ப தமிழ் அன்புடன் உன்னை நான் இனிக்க 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 பருவேனம்மா
ஆரீரரு இங்க யாரீரரு ஆராரு கபியாய் இங்க ஐயா சிராடும் தொட்டிலே என் தொட்டி சுழண்டாடும் இங்கு சாமிக்கு தொகை மயிலாடி வரும் எங்கடிச்சா எனழுதோ இங்க ஐயா நீங்கள் அருங்கிலியே அக்காவோ வைக்கோ கண்ணானே ராய் இங்கு சாமி கீகாத்தென்னமர தென்னமர சோலையிலே இங்கு சாமி செல்ல கீலி அக்கண்ணுறங்கோ இங்கடலோ சுடலை அம்மா எங்க ஐயா கருங்கடலே ஆத்தில்லவானோ என் தில்லவல எல்லையிலே எங்க சாமி திரும்பும் ஐயா இந்த முகோரோ கண்ணே ஆரீரோ ஆறாரு
These are lullabies sung by a group of women who've come a very, very long way in order to sing these lullabies, which are a dying tradition. And in fact, we would have gone to where they live, but it's still a high security zone up in the northeast of Sri Lanka, so we couldn't make it there, and they've travelled all day to come here and sing these songs for us.
It's been fine for us to travel up to the Jaffna Peninsula, but there's a certain area to the southeast of Jaffna where it's still high security and still very difficult for anyone else apart from the residents of that area to go into in the high security zone.
First of all, tell us about these lullabies.
She remembers her dad's mother singing lullabies, and also she remembers her mother singing lullabies. Her mother bore 10 children, and so she sang the same lyrics that she's singing. She said there's so many lyrics that her mother sang, and she said because of all the troubles and the sadness that she's had, she's forgotten half of them, so she really had to remember what she could in order to sing the same lyrics that her mother sang.
Well, thank you for coming this very long way. I know it's been a long and very hard day for you. I hear that you also sing songs of mourning, laments. Is there a specific tradition of singing laments?
Normally in a funeral, it's not just one person. One person would say one thing about the passed away, and then another lady sitting across the way would then add in another bit, and another lady sitting there would then add in another bit, and so they would all join in to describe and mourn the passing away. So each time she sings, she finds it very difficult because it brings back so many memories. The actual vocal element of it is lost because it's lost within the grief.
Husband.
She's lost her husband and her children, and because of that, as soon as she starts singing, the worry and the sorrow is great.
You lost them in the war?
Yes, she lost all of them in the war now.
And so all of you women who are here now, you've all lost family in the war?
Everyone here has lost at least one or two people in their family.
When you sing lament songs, does that help you in some way? Does that help you come to terms with your grief? Or does it make it worse?
So generally when singing Oppari or these songs of lament, it doesn't really help to cope with the sorrow. It just increases the sorrow. One of these ladies has lost a grandson who studied here in Jaffna at the university, and he was only 3 months away from passing out and finishing his degree. So she says, for sure, when she's going to sing, just all the memories of him, it doesn't go away, it just gets worse.
இங்கே கொடுக்கும் குறையும் இல்லை.
Well, having talked about these funeral songs, these women just began singing. Mm-hmm. And I must say it's very, very hard to listen to. It's really difficult. Very difficult, because they are clearly grieving. This is not something that they're just doing to demonstrate a style of singing. They are genuinely grieving. And it's a very...
I think it's much more sensitive because we're in this country at this time, and that's why we can feel it. I mean, the energy around them is
well. They all have personal stories of loss, and it's a terrible reminder that so many thousands of people died in this long civil war. That's been the blight of Sri Lanka for the past 25 years.
Yeah. It's maybe an apt reminder.
It's nighttime here in Jaffna, and we're in a quiet neighborhood of town. We're actually in a wedding hall, and we are pretty much the only people here except for the caretakers, a stray priest from the nearby temple, and we've come to meet one of the great names in Carnatic music here in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, we're sitting here with Inuvil R. Radhakrishnan, sir. He's one of the senior most musicians is here in Jaffna.
He's a violinist.
That's great. Yeah, he's a violinist.
How do you know Radhakrishna?
I know Radhakrishna so because my teacher in London, Srimati Shivashakti Sivanesan, she speaks very highly of Radhakrishnan sir. And she's known him since childhood. And I believe that Radhakrishnan sir used to actually accompany her when she was a child and do her concerts.
And she was your teacher that came into the World Roots Studio in an earlier program.
Yeah.
There is a famous composer from here who, Harry, you've talked to me about and was a very celebrated composer of Carnatic music.
Yeah.
So tell us about him.
He was my guru's guru. And his name was Yalpanam Enviramani Ayya. He was a prolific composer. He'd write numerous compositions. Whenever someone asked for a composition, sitting in front of him, he'd just take a pen and paper, write it, sing it, record it, and there you go. That was it. He had a great, great gift. And he was very, very celebrated here in Jaffna, and he only passed away just a few years ago. And his house is actually a couple of streets down the road.
Wow, so it's very, very local to where we are right now.
Absolutely,
in Jaffna. Radhakrishnan, so did you know Viramani Iyer?
Radhakrishnan sir knew Viramani Iyer very well. When he was age 30, Viramani Iyer, who was senior to Radhakrishnan sir, maybe Viramani Iyer was about 45 then. So when Radhakrishnan sir was 30, he used to... Well, it was the first time that Viramani Iyer asked him to accompany his vocal concert. So, and then since then, they worked together with Radhakrishnan accompanying Viramani Iyer during his singing. He was a very celebrated artist, not only here in Jaffna, but also in India. And Radhakrishnan says, there's very few people that's given Jaffna a name in India. Viramani Iyer was so gifted that he gave Jaffna a name in India, and hence that's why he's called Yalpanam Viramani Iyer.
Ah, because Yalpanam is the original name of Jaffna.
Of Jaffna, yes.
It feels, Harry, like all the sort of pieces of this very complex puzzle that makes up your life are sort of all coming together now here in Jaffna.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And so, you know, your guru and the compositions of Viramani Iyer, which are very special to you because your guru learnt from him. And she, your guru, has also played with Radhakrishnan.
As has Viramani Iyer, yes.
And so everything seems to kind of come together, and I think it's time to hear a Viramani Iyer piece. Thank you. We're at our final destination, and it's been quite a trip. It feels like forever ago that we were standing on that beach in Colombo, thinking about coming up here to the north of Sri Lanka, to Jaffna. Yeah. But this spot where we are right now is very, very special to you.
This is where I was brought up by my grandparents as a little baby, from 6 months till about 2.5. So I've come back to the house that, basically our house, our house here in Jaffna.
We're outside Jaffna town. We've been driving for about 20 minutes. The light is very beautiful. Its sun is going down and there's a lot of vegetation.
Yeah, the gardens are nice.
Banana trees and coconut trees, as always. Lots of flowers.
Yeah. And vegetables.
Harry, it's been really an incredible journey. We thought for a while that we might not even be able to make it up here to Jaffna. And I'm very glad that we did. But what do you feel you've got out of this extraordinary trip that we've done as the World Roots Academy protégé?
Jaffna has been a real experience. There's so much that I've been told about Jaffna, and I've told about back home. All I hear is back home when I'm in London. Back home it was like this, and back home it was like that. And in back home we do this. And it was really nice, because when I came here, I felt really privileged that I understood a little bit about the culture before I got here, and I wasn't a complete stranger. But there's a big difference between being told something and actually experiencing it. And that is, I think I've just learned huge amounts from being here, from meeting the people, from seeing the culture, from even just, I've been told so much about the colour of the earth here, that it's red, orange in colour, and it makes such a difference to feel it. Not only that, the music here is so different. It's much, maybe in myself, I didn't value Jaffna and the people and Sri Lankan Tamils, and especially our music, as much as I do now, having been here, especially after the few sessions we've just done in the past 2 days. It's been amazing. When I was in India, I was thinking so much about the music and thinking, right, I need to develop the music, and the music will develop me. However, coming to Jaffna, I've realised that I've helped understand myself better. And I know that there needs to be no difference between me, myself, my culture and my music and spirituality. It's all just one pathway. And I think that's what I've realised from the people here, that they are the people, they are the music, they are the culture, they just know themselves. So it's really helped me to find myself and my music and my spirituality and who I am.
recording made on location for World Roots. That was World Roots Academy protégé Hari Sivanesan performing in Jaffna in Sri Lanka. World Roots was presented by Lucy Duran and produced by Peter Meanwell. And just to say, this coming Wednesday, the 27th of July, the World Roots Academy will be coming to the BBC Proms for a one-off late-night performance by Aruna Sairam and Hari Sivanesan. Do check the Proms website for details.
On BBC Radio 3 from the 2011 Proms, a musical celebration of a great television event. Earlier this year, Human Planet brought to our screens some of the diverse cultures of the world with a musical soundtrack by Nitin Sawhney.
It was inspired by these incredible images, and I think if you write music that's inspired by incredible visuals, inevitably the music works in itself.
You can hear excerpts from Nitin Sawhney's score and also some of the performers heard in Radio 3's accompanying Music Planet series. A memorable Saturday night at the BBC Proms on BBC Radio 3 from 7:30.
Back to this afternoon. It's 4 o'clock, and now on BBC Radio 3 Jazz Library, here's Alan Shipton.
Today, the subject of Jazz Library is probably the most famous violinist in all of jazz history, Stefan Grappelli. And I'm delighted to be joined by a man who was his musical partner for many a long year, Martin Taylor. Martin, welcome to Jazz Library.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Let's go right back to the beginning of the Stefan story. We're not going to delve into his very early years as a dance band musician playing with Gregor and his Gregorians, though we might come onto that band.
Well, it's an interesting story.
Well, we're going to hear the very beginning of the Hot Club back in 1934 when he first teamed up with Django Reinhardt. Let's try and just look at what this band meant at the time, because in a way this was, apart from Eddie Lang and Jovinuti in the States, nobody much was doing this sort of thing in jazz at all at the time.
No, but they were very much inspired by Eddie Lang and Jovinuti. I think they were the first European jazz musicians really to give jazz a European voice and to play jazz with a European accent. The reason they made it an all-string group, Stefan used to talk about this quite often, was because it was before microphones when they played live, so they had their own internal balance. Another thing that Stefan used to talk about a lot in the early days was, of course, they weren't playing for listeners, and they weren't playing for people going along to a concert and sitting down and hanging on to every single note, as you know, jazz enthusiasts do. They were playing for dancers, so people were dancing around. And he said when they first used to play, it's hard to believe now, but it sounded so far out to a lot of people that he said people would be dancing around, and when they got near the band, they would put their fingers in their ears.
It's strange to think that now, because when you hear the track we're going to hear, which is Dinah, and a classic Django solo followed by a slightly tentative Stefan, I think. He's not the assured player that we're going to hear developing through the programme. But this is far from far out. It's very melodious, it's very harmonic. But I guess it's Django's kind of plangency on guitar that cuts through.
You can actually hear that he's really being kept on his toes by Django. At that point, you know, Django was already this incredible virtuoso guitarist, doing the most amazing things and able to express himself with such depth in his playing. There was a kind of an edginess to Stefan's playing then. And, you know, he really used to dig in. You could hear him digging into the violin and really swinging like crazy on these things. But, you know, he was, I think, as anybody would ever, any soloist that would share the stage with Django, he'd be probably even a little bit scared and a little bit intimidated by the situation. Thank you.
Dinah by the Quintet of the Hot Club of France from their earliest recording session in December 1934. Stefan Grappelli on violin with Django Reinhardt, Roger Chaput and Joseph Reinhardt on guitars, and Louis Vola, their long-term bassist, playing the bass. That's on an extraordinary French 3-CD collection from the Saga label called Retrospective Django Reinhardt 1934-53, with a remarkable and well-illustrated booklet inside it. We're going to jump 4 years now, Martin, to a recording made here in Britain in 1938 by the quintet of Sweet Georgia Brown. And you can hear by this time that Stefan is now quite happy to step into the limelight with a kind of verve and elan that he didn't have in those very first recordings.
Yeah, you can almost feel that he's found his voice and confidence. I don't think he was ever lacking in confidence before, to be honest, knowing Stefan as I did. There always was that little bit of rivalry going on all the time between Stefan and Django. I know that that's very well known. But there's something very interesting about the track we're going to listen to now, that's of him playing Sweet Georgia Brown, is that when I first started touring in the States with Stefan, I discovered there was a huge following amongst bluegrass musicians for Stefan. And in fact, we toured a lot with David Grisman, the great mandolin player. And a lot of the violinists in bluegrass, and also the Texas swing players, you know, absolutely idolise Stefan. And when actually you go and you listen to this track, you can hear where a lot of those players in America actually got a lot of that from. You know, this is probably an early example of the traffic starting to go both ways.
One of the things he does here, and it's very characteristic of the style that he would do later on, is that it's not so noticeable now as it's going to be, but the little harmonics that come in at the top, his intonation's always so right that he can do this perfectly.
He was absolutely fanatical about intonation. I never, ever heard him, in the 11 years that I toured with him, I never, ever once heard him play out of tune. And that thing with the harmonics that he developed, in fact, a couple of times when I was working with him with Jack Sewing, the Dutch bass player, he was doing it a lot, and we actually said to Stefan, you know, you're doing that harmonic thing a lot, and it was his way of just really double-checking that he was in tune. And he turned it into something so musical and such a characteristic of his playing. And now you hear so many violinists doing that as well and copying that. But that was the reason he used to do that, because he was almost paranoid about being out of tune, and he never, ever was. Thank you.
Sweet Georgia Brown by the Quintet of the Hot Club of France, recorded in January 1938 in Britain. That's Stefan, this time with Django still on guitar, and Roger Chaput and Eugène Weiss, who is another of the regular rhythm guitarists, with Louis Vola once more on the bass. And that's again from the retrospective Django Reinhardt collection on Saga. We're going to move now to a remarkable DVD called Stefan Grappelli, A Life in the Jazz Century. It's a double DVD set, and the first half of it is a documentary film about Stefan and his life. But it's got a remarkable set of films of Stefan with the band that he worked with during the war, with George Shearing on piano. And, Martin, I've always loved this aspect of Stefan's playing because, as we'll discover later in the programme, he was always a pianophile.
Oh,
and
yes.
He and George seemed to have an empathy that went beyond the ordinary.
Oh, yes, very much. You know, I worked a couple of times in America with Stefan and George Shearing because Stefan and I used to play at the Paul Masson Winery just south of San Francisco. We used to do that every year. And he used to tell lots of stories about working with George Shearing. And Stefan used to say, when I was in London during the war, he said, they were the happiest days of my life. He said, I had such a great time, you know, and playing music. And of course, he worked with George Shearing at Hatchett's. And he said, during the blackout, George Shearing used to take him home every night. And you should say, Stefan, take my arm, Stefan, I'll get you home. he used to take him back. Kind of one of his favourite stories. And also, Stefan was very funny. You know, he used to come out with some very funny things. And he always used to talk about when he first met George Shearing. And George Shearing still had a very Cockney accent at that time. Of course, he refined that when he went to America and became sort of very kind of refined English accent. And sometimes when Stefan used to talk about George Shearing in those early days, he used to go into a kind of Cockney accent. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to play Side by Side. He thought this was really funny, about they had this Cockney accent. He hadn't really heard that before.
It's funny you should say that about the announcers, because in this little clip we've chosen, we have exactly the sort of voice that George told me he realised once he heard it on the BBC he had to sound a little bit more like.
That's where he got it from.
This plaintive little tune we've all heard so often is the Stefan Blues, introducing the world-famous French violinist and composer Stefan Grappelli with his quintet. This unique combination is recognized as one of the greatest exponents of modern swing music and begins with an exhilarating number written by Stefan on his first visit to London before the war and appropriately called Piccadilly Stomp.